Hi, Mom.
Chloe, welcome home.
So is everything set for Dad's surprise party?
He got called into work.
Can I buy you a coffee?
I'm waiting for someone. My dad.
Hi, sweetheart.
Hey. Welcome aboard PanCon flight 257 to London. Flight time today will be 6 hours and 30 minutes.
I love you.
People from all over this plane have simply vanished.
Chris, let me in! Chris!
I know you all want answers, and believe me, so do I, and I'll do my best to get them.
I heard some doctors talking. It's not just here. It's all over the world. One of these days, the
sky's gonna break. Chloe, are you okay?
Yeah, Mom and Raimi, they're both gone. One of these days, the
mountains are gonna fall into... Irene knew this was coming. The way it happened. How could she know that?
He took them to protect them from the darkest time in the history of this world.
The God my mother talked about would never do something like this.
We all have a right to know if we're gonna die.
We're gonna die.
No spoilers, no flaps, no elevators, and if I run this thing dry, no reverse thrust. I need some room. I just really need you to know how much I love you, no matter what happens.
Dad?
Looks like the end of the world. One of these days, the sky's gonna break, and everything
will escape, and I'll know. Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith. Joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCrescio.
How you doing today, Mike?
I am doing great, you know? It's a fun time hanging out with my best bud, talking about movies, you know?
Yeah.
What's not to enjoy?
I love the enthusiasm behind that. That came across as very genuine, and I appreciate that.
Aw, thanks, man.
Now, Mike, the year was 2014, when a new story unfolded across our screens. This story was based on a successful novel and depicted a world in which a certain portion of the population suddenly and mysteriously vanished without a trace. It then followed the people who remained as they sought answers and attempted to process this unprecedented event. Our main character is a father who cheats on his wife and is dealing with a strained relationship with his rebellious daughter. Another character is a preacher having a crisis of faith. This story was critically acclaimed, gathering a fervent fan base, and is often considered one of the greatest television shows of the modern age. Of course, I'm talking about right now with The Leftovers. But that same year, Nicolas Cage made a shitty movie with the same concept. and it was called Left Behind.
Woof.
How about that intro? Was that good, Mike? Did you appreciate that?
Was that was a solid Boom Goes the Dynamite.
Yeah, obviously we were both big Leftovers fans. The Leftovers, basically the same story, premiered its first season about 4 months before this movie came out.
Swing and a miss, yeah. for Left Behind.
Now, Left Behind is actually a reboot of a Christian movie series that originally starred Kirk Cameron in the lead role. And the movies were based on a book series, of which there are, I am not joking, 16 books.
Yeah, my mom actually read all of them.
Really?
Which is crazy.
I did not know that. Did you tell her that you were reviewing Left Behind Nicolas Cage?
Yeah, she was like, what? She didn't know that these movies even existed.
Oh,
like,
really?
The Kirk Cameron ones or these ones. Yeah.
Really? Because I only knew... I didn't know they were based on books when I started this. I knew there was a Kirk Cameron one, but I had no idea there was a book series until I researched this episode.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. She, like, loved the books, and I either didn't pick up on, like, the heavily Christian overtones, or those aren't in the books. or as overt as they are in the movies.
Okay. Interesting. Fair enough. So this one is an adaptation of the original book, developed by Cloud 10 Pictures, which is a Canadian production studio that exclusively makes Christian faith-based films. As for me, being the hedonistic bag of sin that I am, the only time I had ever heard of Left Behind before Nicolas Cage starred in the movie is when it was parodied on The Simpsons.
Left Below.
Ooh,
He is Ritson production.
I wish you'd come to church with us, sweetheart.
Church? I'd rather play golf on the holiest day of the week.
Oh, finally, a character I can relate to. I bet good things happen to him.
But, honey, with recent troubles in the Mideast and other ominous signs, the rapture could soon be upon us.
The rapture? Easy there, Helen. Science has shown religion is just an old wives' tale. I'm sorry, but the only thing I'm praying for is that you take it easy on our credit cards.
Oh, Mr. Thompson, what if your wife finds out?
It's modern times. Everyone's doing it. Where did my Christian limo driver go?
My pious husband is missing.
The baby I chose to have baptized is gone. Mr. Thompson, what's happening?
It's the rapture, Shauna. The rapture. The virtuous have gone to heaven, and the rest of us have been left below.
Left below? Where have I heard that before?
It's the title of the movie.
It's everywhere.
You know, that makes sense for you.
Yeah, honestly, there are a lot of things in my life that I only discovered later. Like, I knew about through The Simpsons that I only discovered later weren't originally Simpsons-related things.
No, this is real.
Yeah, exactly. Now, honestly, if you've seen that Simpsons parody, you've pretty much seen this movie. Every cliche about how preachy and poorly made and annoying most faith-based movies can be are 100% true about Left Behind. And I'm pretty convinced that this is one of those roles Nicolas Cage took to pay off his massive debts. He was reportedly paid about $3 million for his role in this movie and completed his work in about 10 days.
Wow, yeah. What a hero.
I know, $3 million for 10 days. Honestly, like, I would do it. I would start.
I'd take it.
Yeah, why not, right? Now, in any case, Nicolas Cage plays an airline pilot in this movie named Rayford Steele, who gets left behind while flying a plane during the rapture. Also left behind is his daughter, Chloe Steele, played by Cassie Thompson. She's known for her role on Big Love. The other half of Cage's family is saved during the rapture, though. His religious wife, Irene Steele, who is played by Leia fucking Thompson, of all people.
What a waste.
I know. Of course, Lorraine from Back to the Future and Howard the Duck and all these different things. I don't know why Howard the Duck was the next credit.
No,
that
that's number two on her credits. Yeah, that makes sense.
His young son, Ramey Steele, is played by Major Dodson. I don't know if you recognize this kid, Mike, but he was a really annoying kid named Sam on The Walking Dead.
I don't recognize him, but Major Dodson might be the best name of all time. Pack it up.
That is a great name, and actually, when I read it for the first time, my mind immediately jumped to Jurassic Park.
When you just said it, I also went Dodson.
Dodson!
Dodson here.
We've got Dodson here! Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have that level of enthusiasm watching this kid in the movie, because I hate him. He's... hate him on The Walking Dead. I was glad when he and his whole family were eaten by zombies, and I was glad when he left this movie. Fuck that kid.
Yeah.
Now, this movie actually has a pretty huge ensemble cast, right? And a lot of names to make you go, oh, that guy, are in this
movie.
Yeah. So first up, playing a sexy investigative journalist, Buck Williams. Which
second best name of all time.
After the real name, Major Dodson. It's, it's this fictional name, Buck Williams. He's played by Chad Michael Murray, known for One Tree Hill. And I really liked him on Agent Carter, actually. He was on that show when it was on the air. I miss Agent Carter. That was like the one Marvel TV show where I'm like, this was really good. Bring this back.
Oh, better cancel it.
Yeah. After that, there's Hattie Durham, the flight attendant that Cage might have an affair with, who is played by Nikki Whelan, who's an Australian actress who's probably best known in the U.S. for her role on Scrubs Season 9, a.k.a. Scrubs Med School, which I have decided does not exist, and you can't convince me otherwise.
Scrubs the other.
Yeah, exactly. From there, Season 6 winner of American Idol Jordan Sparks is in this movie.
Woof.
Playing Shasta Carvel. Pastor Bruce Barnes is played by Lance E. Nichols from Tremé, who also appeared as Cop Number 3 in Snake Eyes.
Counts as a reunion.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That still counts. That's a Nicolas Cage reunion. William Ragsdale from Fright Night and Justified plays Cage's co-pilot, Chris Smith. Martin Kleba, the short bald guy from the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, who plays Melvin Weir. Quentin Aaron, who is the guy Sandra Bullock helps out in The Blind Side, plays Buck's camera guy, Simon. After that, horror fans might recognize the other flight attendant Kimmy as Stephanie Honor from The Final Destination and Mirrors 2. Character actor Gary Grubbs, who also appeared in Bad Lieutenant Port of Call New Orleans, plays Dennis, so another reunion right there. And former Olympic bobsledder and current cast member on Celebrity Big Brother, Lolo Jones, plays Lori. And this is actually a pretty cool one. Venice Baxter, who is the passenger who's doing heroin on the flight, she is played by Georgina Rawlings, who was Gal Gadot's stunt double on Wonder Woman.
Really?
Yeah. That's kind of cool.
What a weird connection. I like it, though.
That's definitely cool. And also, Judd Lormond plays the guy who drives by real suddenly in one scene and gives Chloe some U2 tickets. and we'll talk about that scene later. Lormond also appeared in Rage, which we just reviewed in the last episode of The Complete Works. And I don't know if you're aware of this, Mike, but despite starring in Rage, he is still just Nicolas Cage. Now, Left Behind was written by Paul Lalonde and John Pattis. Lalonde is actually the founder of Cloud 10 Pictures as well. And it was directed by Vic Armstrong, who has actually had an amazing career, Mike. I was looking into this guy, only not as a director. He was a stuntman. And in fact, he was Harrison Ford's stunt double in all three Indiana Jones movies and Return of the Jedi. Plus, he doubled for Christopher Reeve on Superman 1 and 2 and George Lazenby for On Her Majesty's Secret Service. And he's directed a couple of things here and there. He actually did the opening sequence for Terminator 2.
What?
Yeah. And,
what?
And served as second unit director on The Amazing Spider-Man. I know, right? His IMDb is insane. It's insane. Now, his previous feature directing credit, he'd only actually fully directed one movie before this, was a 1993 action movie called Joshua Tree, which starred Dolph Lundgren.
So this guy could have been, like, he could have made John Wick, is what you're saying, if he had taken a different path in life.
He could have. You know, this movie came out the same year as John Wick.
2014 was a big year.
It was. John Wick, The Leftovers, and Left Behind.
I can't believe we're still making new movies because we peaked in 2014.
That's the holy trilogy of movies right there.
it's the new We Made It My Trilogy.
John Wick, Left Behind, and the TV series The Leftovers. The perfect trilogy of movies. Now, his next film was 2016's A Sunday Horse, which is still the most recent film he's worked on. I have never heard of that movie. It does not have a Wikipedia entry, so we will move on from that. Now, the thing about faith-based movies is that even though they are largely terrible, there is usually an audience for them. But even for these movies, Left Behind just barely made back its budget. Its budget was about $16 million, and it grossed about $19 million. So not great. It did make it back, but like still not great. Paul Lalonde did try to get a sequel made after the film came out, and took to Indiegogo to try to ask for $500,000 in contributions. It did not make even 20% of its goal. So that kind of crashed and burned. Apparently he's actually bought the rights to all of the books in the Left Behind series as of like 2017. And he's still trying to make this happen. So, who knows? Maybe Left Behind 2 will happen one day. Actually, not a sequel to this movie, but there was another Left Behind movie in 2016 that was modeled after the Twilight movies, trying to aim at like the young adult audience.
What?
And based on how bad this movie is, like I can only imagine how bad that is.
We may have to review that movie,
just purely out of curiosity. Like we got to see what that's like
as a scientific endeavor.
Now, Left Behind opened at number 6 at the box office on October 3rd, 2014. And if you weren't seeing it, then perhaps you were seeing the number 1 movie that came out that weekend, which was David Fincher's excellent adaptation of Gillian Flynn's Gone Girl. You could also have been seeing the first spinoff that would create the Conjuring universe, Annabelle, which came out that weekend. Or you could have seen the movie that made even less money and even got even worse reviews than Left Behind, Jason Reitman's Men, Women, and Children. Now, or what were you going to say, Mike?
Nothing.
Okay. Your mouth opened up, and I thought you were going to say something.
I don't think I've ever heard of that movie, so that's all I was going to say.
Yeah, fair enough. It was there's a weird period of Jason Reitman's career where he made, like, 4, like, really big, critically acclaimed movies, and then, like, 3 or 4, like, really not, like, critically acclaimed movies in a row. That was one of them. It had Adam Sandler in it. But anyway, the IMDb plot synopsis for Left Behind reads, "A small group of survivors are left behind," after...
They said the thing.
After millions of people suddenly vanish and the world is plunged into chaos and destruction. So, Mike, what are your overall thoughts on Left Behind, now that we've gotten all that out of the way?
My overall thoughts on Left Behind are just wow, you know? Like, we recently on the Film Book Cast just reviewed Glass, and you know we applauded so much, like, you know, a huge part of the reason we all sort of liked the movie was that, like, you know, it just went for it. It really just, like, swung for the fences and did it.
Yep.
And I think Left Behind does that, but I hate it because it did it. I can't... Like, it takes itself so seriously because it's, you know, it's a faith-based movie and it's about this thing and, you know, this, you know, religious event. And just, but, like, what the fuck? It's so weird. It's so self-serious about everything that's going on. And it's, everything that's going on is on 11.
Yep.
In that, like... What's the final sentence there? The world is plunged into chaos and anarchy or some shit?
Yeah, chaos and destruction is what it says.
Chaos and destruction, yeah. Yeah. They had that much on, like, the story, like the whiteboard of when they're writing this movie, and they were just like, let's just do this. And it's just, like, absolute insanity, but hilarious because it's so low budget, so poorly acted by so everybody. It's just a total mess of a movie.
Yes, no, I am with you 100% on this. This movie is terrible. But, you know, unlike so many of the other Cage, like, video-on-demand movies we've done in the past, which are terrible and boring, this movie is terrible and amazing. because, you know, at no point does anyone in this movie behave like a human being. Nope. This movie has no understanding of how people behave or how the world works. Like, for example, like, there, like, I kind of alluded to this earlier, there's this one scene where a guy just drives up on a on an airport cart, and it's just like, hey, I got these U2 concert tickets, you want them? I've been trying to get these for 2 weeks, here you go!
Beep, beep, when he drives away.
And I was watching that, and he got them for Nicolas Cage. And he gave them to his daughter to give to him. But, like, why would this random guy who we've never mentioned before this point and we never mentioned again, why would this random guy spend 2 weeks of his life trying to get Nicolas Cage U2 tickets for a concert that he's not going to?
Yeah, you know? And,
like,
very weird.
Like, why can't Nicolas Cage get those tickets himself? It's 2014. Online ticketing exists.
and has existed for a very long time.
And that's probably how this guy got the tickets. So, like, why couldn't Cage just do that? And then, like, I have further questions. Like, was that guy raptured or was he left behind? I don't know, but that's, like, saintly behavior to spend 2 weeks of your life trying to buy U2 tickets for Nicolas Cage for no reason.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, it's very weird. This movie spends a long time, like, in the very, you know, first half hour, which is way too long for what, like, for a first act in this kind of movie.
Yeah.
Like, setting up everyone's behavior, and it took me so long to realize... I was like, oh, this guy's gonna get raptured. He's being bad. Like, and then I realized, wait, no, it's the other way around. It's all the boring people that are gone, and it'll be all the interesting characters that are left.
Right. Which theoretically is a good thing, but not so much in this movie. But also, I mean, just everything about this movie. It's like the score, for example. The score is like this obnoxious elevator music that plays so loudly for like that first half hour, and then the movie is like just drastically overlit. Like, it's a very bright movie, you know, which I think I noticed the contrast more, like, when it first opened up and it was really bright, because the last several Cage movies that we've done have been, like, pretty gritty movies, and so, like, you know, our last movie was Rage, for example, and that's a pretty, like, dimly lit movie, and, yeah. And this is, like, the complete 180, but not in a good way, like...
It's just a sterile fluorescent lights everywhere.
Exactly. It's very overlit. The dialogue is clunky. The performance, like you said, pretty much uniformly bad. This is, I was thinking about this is the Catholic Church's answer to The Room. And I'm here for it. Like, I had a blast watching this movie. It's one of the great unintentional comedies that I've seen in a very long time. Like, just thinking about any kind of internal logic in this movie, and it completely falls apart. Like, everything, nothing makes sense.
Yeah, and I love that you even texted me, like, you need the Mystery Science Theater riff tracks version of this ASAP, because it really would be amazing.
Oh, my God.
There's so many, like, just awkward pauses in dialogue. Like with the ticketing thing. Like, yeah, spent 2 weeks on them, and we just pause, and then he drives, and he's like, okay, bye, and he drives away. It's like,
oh.
Yeah, I wish it made that noise. Yeah, it's just so goofy in the like, and I feel bad because it seems like somebody's being earnest about it somewhere in the process. But
right.
At the same time, like, nah, dog.
Yeah, but that's what makes a great unintentional comedy, is, like, the person making it can't realize that they're making a comedy. You know?
Right. Yeah.
You know, like, Tommy Wiseau didn't intend for The Room to be funny. He intended to make it, like, his masterpiece, like, his the great dramatic work. And, you know, Tommy Wiseau is insane, so he came out with The Room. and ended up being, you know, hilarious. And I feel like that's the case with Left Behind. I don't, you know, obviously the screenwriters are not as big a public persona as Tommy Wiseau, so we don't really know what they're like. But, like, man, like, everything about this movie, like, just the rules that this sets up. Like, for example, all the kids got taken by the Rapture in this movie. Like, all the kids got sent to heaven. And they mentioned the movie, like, no one's seen a kid anywhere. And, like... like, as soon as I said that, I was like, I mean, I started to notice it originally, like, the, you know, all the kids on the plane disappeared, and, like, the little brother disappeared, and I was like, okay, so all the kids took away, but then, like, what's the cutoff age for for that? What is God saying, like, all right, you're not a kid anymore, like, what's, like, yeah. Is it 16, is it 18? Like, I'm not really sure. Okay, I guess the idea is, like, well, kids are too young to know right from wrong, or they're too innocent to, like,
right.
Like, they're pure of hearts and they haven't been subjected to the adult world, but, like, there are, like, my mind, and I hate that I thought about this, my mind immediately jumped to the thought of, like, what about those two girls who killed their friend because of the Slender Man thing? Like, what did they get saved? Like,
yeah. Like, I definitely, in eighth grade, knew some kids that would not have been raptured.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Yeah, and, like, I was thinking that, like, when they, the daughter goes to, like, the hospital looking for her brother, even though she was literally holding him when he vanished, which is a whole, like, the funniest scene in the movie.
Yes.
But anyway, she goes to the hospital and, like, you know, she goes to the maternity ward for some reason, and all the kids are gone.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that's not, like, you're not baptized yet, and the whole reason is baptism, like, your original sin. Like, I've been to Catholic school for a long time.
Yeah.
I don't think you did this right, but I assume if you... if you wrote the movie, you'd probably research it. So maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. This movie, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But we really need to talk about, you know, the scene that stood out to me, Mike, to preempt your question. when the brother gets raptured at the ball, because it's the funniest fucking thing.
Oh, my God. It's so great. That's the moment where the rapture starts, right? And it's, yeah. You know, the brother is, like, walking with the sister, and they're having, like, a little heartfelt family moment. Like, oh, our family's going to be fine. And then he gives her a big hug. And then this, like, you hear this, like, giant snap sound, right? Like, it's like, yeah. And suddenly, like...
The screen flashes white.
Yeah, and suddenly you see the same scene, and the daughter is just hugging, like, the brother's clothes, but the brother's gone, and it was, like, it happens so suddenly, and like, it completely comes out of nowhere, and it was just the funniest thing. And then, like, the way the clothes are, like, just, like, exactly symmetrical with the way the kid was.
Yeah.
It's great.
And they hang there for a minute, like a Looney Tunes cartoon, like somebody that ran too fast, and then they fall.
Yes.
And then the mall just erupts into anarchy.
Yeah.
Like, the first thing that humans apparently would do,
yeah.
If people suddenly disappeared, is just riot and loot and steal TVs and shit.
Yes.
I was like, no, I don't think so.
I mean, I could see that. I could see that being the case. I think Knowing did the same thing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the characters didn't disappear in Knowing, but, like, it was, like, you know, apocalyptic situation. Like, you know, that's depicted in a lot of different things. I'll forgive the movie that. But the actual, like... the actual sequence in that mall, like, it's so dumb. I mean, it felt like all of the extras were not given any kind of direction other than, like, just run around and scream aimlessly. And, like, that was, like, ah! And, like, that kind of thing.
It's like when SpongeBob shreds everything but How to Be a Waiter, and they cut inside his brain. That's what's going on,
yes,
in the mall.
This was the movie equivalent of that scene. Yes. But we'll talk about that scene a lot more in a bit. I did want to talk about the logic. Like, you know, we talked about... you know, the logic about, like, who gets raptured, but on the flip side, like, what's the criteria for getting left behind, you know, because there are some characters who we see doing bad things, you know, like having affairs, like Nicolas Cage, or Gasp, gambling, but...
yeah, that was the funniest.
Yeah, that was pretty great. But then there are other people who seem, like, perfectly fine, you know, what we see them in, like, for example... there's the old couple on the plane, right? There's the old lady, right. The old lady with dementia who says, like, looks over to Chad Michael Murray. He's like, oh, it's Frank Sinatra.
And, yeah.
And the old lady's husband, who's like, that's not Frank Sinatra. And it plays off. It's like, oh, it's this lovely old couple. Their memories are going, whatever.
Isn't dementia cute?
But then the husband disappears and the lady stays. And I saw that and I was like, what? Why did she get left there and the husband disappeared? What did that lady do? All we know about that lady is that she has dementia.
Look, man, I'm not trying to be serious about it, but no, I have no idea. This seems like a really dark thing for the for them to decide. I wanted her to, like, have a moment with Frank Sinatra where she confesses, like, some brutal backstory. Like, I did 25 years at State Penn.
And that's how I became the head of the Japanese Yakuza.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was weird. And then the other major character that I had a lot of questions about was the Muslim guy on the plane, who before the rapture we only see trying to offer to help the short guy put his bag up top, right? That's the only thing we see that guy do. And then, you know, that seems like good guy behavior. That seems like, oh well, you'll be saved. And then the movie does not do that, and my only assumption can be is that it's because he's Muslim, and that's upsetting.
Like, yeah, I mean, it seems like Jordan Sparks' character only doesn't get raptured because, like, she has a mental illness, maybe. Lita, right. Like, she keeps talking about how her husband keeps trying to take the daughter away, and, like, it seems like she might have, like, a history of something. Why didn't she get raptured? We don't, like, that doesn't make any sense.
No idea. Yeah, and I think that's the major problem with Left Behind and movies like it, which is that, you know, for example, have you seen the trailer for Breakthrough? Which is the upcoming movie. It's a faith-based movie. I've seen the trailer for it so many fucking times, and I hate it. But it stars the girl from This Is Us, and Topher Grace is in it as a preacher. And, like, anyway, it's you watch the trailer, you know what I'm talking about. But all these movies have an attitude that, like, Christianity is the only correct religion. And only through the power of, like, prayer and faith will good things happen to you. Which is fine for people who are really devoutly Christian, but it's pretty alienating for, like, anybody else. you know what I mean? And that's fine. That's kind of who these movies are made for. But at the same time, it's like a bit of like a preaching to the choir, no pun intended.
Is that what that saying's about?
You know, and there are like I don't mean to like shit on Christianity because I am like technically Catholic. But there are
great, you're recovering Catholic.
But there are great movies dealing with religion, like directly or indirectly, that are some of my favorite movies. I mean, First Reformed came out just last year, and it was amazing. I think Ethan Hawke's performance in that movie is, like, other than Tony Collette, my favorite performance of 2018. And, you know, just 2 years ago, we had Martin Scorsese's Silence. And these are movies that have a lot of conflicted thoughts about religion, and that's more interesting to me. But even if you just want something, like, inspiring or life-affirming, like, you know, Cloud Atlas is a movie that has these kind of themes. Superman Returns is a movie that has those kind of themes. You know, It's a Wonderful Life. Like, these are real movies with real points to make. And they're not just, like, finger-wagging about how everyone is going to hell except you, the guy who made this movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But that's, like, exactly the point of this movie, which is, like, some kind of evil, underhanded greed motive to make a Christian-based or faith-based movie to sucker the people into giving you their money because you told them what they want to hear, which it's a whole thing. Maybe this should be a different podcast.
Discussion. I mean, the movie brings it up, man. That's all it is. You know,
that's true.
It's relevant to the discussion. But let's talk about Nicolas Cage because we really haven't discussed what his character is like in this movie. What did you think of Nicolas Cage in Left Behind?
This seems definitely like a paycheck movie because this is a scenario, like we said, that like everything else in this movie is on 11, right? Like chaos and destruction. Like the daughter almost gets hit by a recently like vacated vehicle like 17 times.
Yep.
Like somehow they keep aiming for her and then and then disappearing. It's the weirdest thing.
Yes.
But right, so like it's crazy shit going on. This is a fantastical like scenario, and Cage is not meeting this movie on that level. He's like kind of sleepwalking through it, and it's weird because this is the one moment in these you know, direct-to-video movies where it would make sense if he was like on 11 doing Cage, but instead he's just like, I'm a straight guy, like pew pew, straight shooter guy.
Yeah,
it's like, what are you like? Come on, man.
Yeah, I was watching some interviews with Cage before we recorded this podcast, and he was saying that you know, people might expect him to be wild in this movie, and he chose not to do that. That was a deliberate choice on his part.
In terms of preparation, it's not really something you can prepare for. It's more about how to make it authentic, how to make the experience that's happening on the plane authentic to the people in the audience. You know, sometimes people like to see me go wild and and do crazy things in movies, And sometimes I like to do that when they don't think I'm going to do that. And sometimes I don't do that when they think I'm going to do that. And I don't do that here.
Yeah. But, man, like, I wish he had. Because, I mean, this movie is insane. And, you know, I have defended the subdued Cage during insane movies in the past. Remember Drive Angry? That was a complaint that you had about Drive Angry, which is that Cage is, like, you know, kind of being the stoic badass in that movie, but he's not going, like, full Cage, which is, like, it would have been appropriate for a movie like Drive Angry. But I love him in Drive Angry. I think he's, like, appropriately badass in that movie. I cannot give him that same defense in this movie. I think he's fine. Like, he's not actively bad, and I think he's probably giving the best performance out of anybody in this movie.
I don't know. Chad Michael Murray is serving up some looks, though.
But good point. But yeah, I think Cage is fine. But it definitely feels like a role that he wanted to get over with as soon as possible. You know, and like I said, he got $3 million for 10 days of work. Like I get it. That makes
sense. Yeah, I don't blame him.
Totally makes sense. What did you think of Cage like with his daughter in this movie? Like their kind of relationship. I mean, they're apart from each other for most of the movie.
Yeah.
So you really only have like the opening scene and the ending scene with them.
I can only assume the daughter has gone back for, like, an adult education program. Like, she looks like she's 30 or something. She's supposed to be like, I'm away at school for the first time.
Right.
Kind of thing. But anyway, their relationships is just, like, everything is so superficial in this movie. They get one scene together just to set up the stakes. Yeah, Cage just is like, come on, I'm on the clock. I got 10 days. Let's get this over with. How I felt.
Yeah, I will say in that scene that they have, Cage has my favorite acting moment in this movie, which is when he first sees his daughter. Because you know, she's waiting for him at the airport. And she's sitting there with Chad Michael Murray, who's like giving her the dreamy eyes. And then, you know, she sees him like walking with the flight attendant that he's trying to bang up the escalator or whatever. And Cage gets off the escalator, sees her from across the airport, like, you know,
Insta locks eyes.
It's like this huge airport hangar. And he like looks over and sees her immediately. Like he pulls off his sunglasses and he does this big like, whoa, like kind of thing. Like his eyes go wide and he does like a double take. It's great. That's my favorite acting moment in the entire movie.
And then he runs over to her like with his arms out, like reaching towards her.
Right.
Bizarre.
It is bizarre. Now, how do you think this role fits into the roles that we've seen Nicolas Cage play in other movies, Mike?
I don't think it really does. I mean, it's got the Con Air airplane connection.
I was going to say, this is the second Nicolas Cage thriller that mostly takes place on an airplane. So
Yeah. So there's that. But it feels, especially in this moment of the direct-to-video, like, thriller era, it's feel like this is the 19th movie we've reviewed from 2014. What is going on?
This is only the third, Mike.
We're stuck in a time loop. Those movies are, like you were talking about, they're so dark and gritty, and they're action movies, and there's, like, attempts at thrillers and stuff. And this is so different from that, even though, I guess really it's not. It's a disaster movie at, like, its most basic form, right?
Yeah.
It's I don't know. That's all I got.
Fair enough. I mean, yes, it is Cage as the father again, and much like Trespass and Stolen, Cage has a strained relationship with his daughter in this one that gets strengthened by the end after their crazy experience. And I guess you can throw the Croods in that summation,
yep,
too.
Yeah, that's right.
Also, I just wanted to point out, I actually got this one from IMDb, but this is the second time Nicolas Cage has been left behind by religious forces while his son's taken to heaven.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's a deep cut.
Ending of Knowing right there. Yeah. Which incidentally is a much better movie about religion than this one.
I'm going to have to agree with
that. Yes, and actually, in one of those interviews that I was talking about, Cage actually kind of name checks the fact that he's done spiritual movies in the past, like Knowing, like City of Angels, for example.
Yeah. Remember that movie?
Yeah, remember. He also name checks Ghost Rider in there, which is great.
Okay. Ghost Rider 2, though, yes.
Yes, definitely.
A lot of actors would shy away from spirituality and maybe think this is too hot button of an issue. Why did you take on the role, left behind, obviously, about the rapture?
Well, part of it for that very reason. I find that things within reason that challenge me or frighten me are things that I prefer to go towards because I might learn something in the experience. And if you look carefully at my filmography, I do gravitate at times towards spiritual or spiritually themed movies like City of Angels or Knowing or even movies like Ghost Rider. This was an opportunity for me to tell a story that was very important to many people who followed the books and to do it in a way that didn't have any design to the performance, to try to do it as cinema verite as possible, as truthfully as possible, as simplistic and emotionally as possible. And that was the challenge, to make these extraordinary circumstances that are happening around the pilot and all the people on the plane make that real for the audience.
So I think that's interesting, and that, you know, Cage, I think, was probably drawn to the paycheck more than anything, and he won't say that, obviously, in an interview, but I think it is interesting that he is somewhat drawn to these kind of spiritual roles. You know, I don't know anything about Nicolas Cage's personal life, whether he is a spiritual person or not, but, you know, I think it is interesting in that regard, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting to see, you know, like, Martin Scorsese deals with that kind of thing a lot.
Yeah.
Like, you know, filmmakers and actors and stuff that tend to gravitate towards roles that they can explore things with themselves. So I have no idea, like you said, but yeah, that's happened a few times.
Yeah, it definitely has. So let's talk about the moments or scenes that stood out to you in the movie, Mike. Now, we already alluded to the fact that the rapture starts and the kid disappears. And
like, in her arms in a flash. It's the funniest thing. Mid-sentence, I think.
It is pretty great. And then it kind of, you know, devolves into chaos at that point, right?
Yeah.
And the movie can't even do the chaos of the rapture well. You know, like I said, all the extras were kind of just told to run around. You gave the SpongeBob analogy. It was great, just to recap.
Thank you.
But, like, you know, the Leftovers did that in one scene, right? Like, and yeah, it was such a perfectly done scene. You remember like, the opening scene of the Leftovers, where it's the mother on the phone and, like, the baby's crying in the background, and,
yeah,
you know, the camera's completely on the mother, and suddenly you hear the crying stop. And the mother doesn't even realize it at first, and then she turns around, and the baby's gone, and then you see, like, things start happening around them. Great. Perfect. You know?
Yes.
In one scene, The Leftovers accomplishes everything and Left Behind tries and fails to do in its entire runtime.
yeah.
Even, like, Avengers Infinity War in its post-credits scene did the exact same thing much better. Even, like, This Is the End, which, honestly, This Is the End probably does it better than any of those things, because it has, like... Maybe not The Leftovers, but,
you hold your tongue.
Yeah. But, like, This Is the End, you know, does the chaos really well. And obviously it's a comedy movie, but still it does the chaos really, really well. And speaking of This Is the End, I mean, there's a real, there's a scene in This Is the End where, Jay Baruchel and Craig Robinson are kind of wandering through the outside world, and they see a playground and, like, a lone swing kind of swinging in the distance.
Yeah.
And Jay Baruchel looks over and says, "Look at that, man. Innocence Lost." And and they keep walking, and I had a real Innocence Lost moment in my head when during that whole chaos scene, when the daughter is running and she sees a school bus fall off a bridge.
It falls off right in front of her. It's
yes,
the funniest. So she's walking, like, in a drainage ditch for some reason,
right,
underneath, like, a highway overpass, and she gets mugged. Like, these two guys ride by on a motorcycle and, like, steal a backpack off her. Like, it's the weirdest thing.
Yep.
And drive away, and she's like, "That's my brother's, no!" And then you just hear, as the school bus just randomly falls off the highway overpass.
Yeah.
And it's also the funniest thing of all time.
It's just right in front of her. I also love when she's running out right before that, she has to dodge, like, she's trying to get into her car, and this small biplane just comes out of nowhere, and she has to, like, dodge it before it directly hits her car specifically.
Which happens right before a car drives through the window of the mall and almost hits her. It happens so many times.
It's such a perfectly choreographed thing where she just almost gets hit by several vehicles.
Ugh, this movie's so dumb.
It's wonderful. I love this movie so much.
You know what it made me think of a lot, honestly? And this is not a great thing. Especially I thought of it after you mentioned that you need the Riff Trax version of this. Birdemic? Where it's just, like, the stupidest version of, like, of Apocalypse you could think of.
Yep.
This is a couple steps above clip art eagles, like, in Birdemic. But the CG's not great.
No, yeah, CG's pretty bad. It's not good. It's not good. Honestly, like, I knew this movie would be hilarious within seconds, because, I think the first thing you see in the movie is you're kind of panning through Leah Thompson's house. And the moment you see the family photo of the family, and it's, like, it's such a clearly Photoshopped thing, where it's, like, the family kind of all smiling, and Nicolas Cage kind of in the background, sort of hovering over all of them.
Yeah, like a ghost. He's, like, sort of transparent.
Yeah, with his, like, just big smile, like, ooh! And, like, And as soon as it panned over to that, I was like, all right, this movie's going to be amazing. And I was not disappointed from that point forward.
There's another scene I want to bring up. You know, one of these tense moments of life and death that this movie is chock full of, when the oncoming plane, you know, Cage is playing, his co-pilot has disappeared, his radar is out for some reason, like, I don't, none of his instruments work anymore, which, okay. And the other plane, you know, we find it, we see the cockpit of that plane, and there's no, the pilots and co-pilot are gone, and they're in a head-on collision and stuff, and they, like, clip wings and whatever.
Right.
Which is hilarious, because, like, whatever. And then they have Chad Michael Murray be like, oh, you have to go see if we're leaking fuel. And he looks out the window, and he sees it spraying. And he's like, okay, we're going to be okay. And it erupts in the flames. Right after he says, I think we're going to be okay. I think this might be a secret Looney Tunes movie.
It might be. It's pretty amazing. It's honestly, like, of all the movies we talked about recently, I feel like I need to recommend Left Behind the most. It's like, so rarely do we get a movie that is, like, you know, so bad it's good is a term that, like, gets thrown around a lot these days. But I think it really truly applies for Left Behind. It's an amazing experience watching this movie. And I want to talk about the little brother a little bit, who, you know, we talked about the fact that he disappears, and it's hilarious when he does. And I also mentioned the fact that he's the really annoying kid in The Walking Dead, who was on, like, 10 episodes, and then he got his entire family eaten by zombies, and it was hilarious then. Nice. But like, just the way he speaks in this movie, it's like how no... All right, when the daughter...
I know exactly what you're going to say, actually.
When the daughter first shows up to the house, and he comes by, and he's like, hey, did you buy me anything from the airport? And it's and she's like, oh, why don't you look inside the bag and see? It's like, wow, it's the brand new baseball glove I've been asking for! And he runs away. And it's like, and I had to... I had to pause the movie for a second, because I was like, wait... She got a baseball glove at the airport?
Yep. Super weird. And it reminded me of that scene in Knowing when they do the time capsule, and he's like, ha, we all got pictures, and he runs away. That's what this reminded me of. It's like, almost, it might have been, like, dubbed in later, and it doesn't make any sense.
Except it wasn't, because you can see him saying it on the screen, and that's the best part. It's like... but he had another line right after that when he's begging her to, like, take him to the mall with her. And she says, okay. And he's like, all right, I hear there's an 80% off sale at GameStop. And I heard that, and I was like, an 80 fucking percent at GameStop? You're telling me they're selling PlayStation 4 games for, like, $5?
You didn't do anything crazy, like give him a 50% discount, right? Which is a Birdemic Riff Trax reference. I didn't know. It's crazy. This movie, they need a Riff Trax.
It's absolutely insane. Like, there's, like, I can't believe somebody wrote that line. Like, whoever wrote it has never been to a GameStop. Like, they've just never been.
Never talked to a person. What are you talking about?
They've never seen a video game. It's just, it's never been done. They spent their entire life reading the Bible in church. And then they wrote this movie.
Yeah. You're not. That's exactly what happened.
What do youths like?
Video games.
The devil's game. but yeah, I mean, there's just so much stuff like that in this movie. It's insane. It's an insane watch. I know I keep bringing up this U2 guy.
But what, like, if the second one is just about him?
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking, I like to imagine that guy on the airport guard just drives around and passes out U2 tickets to anybody who stops by.
Oh, my God. Hey, we're going to find out he, like, single-handedly saved JFK somehow. Like, he's just such a good guy.
I know. And then that made me wonder, like, what if, did U2 make it? Did they get raptured or did they get left behind?
Whoa.
Or which members of U2 got raptured, which got left behind?
Yeah.
So there's a lot. There's so many questions this movie leaves unanswered, Mike.
I'd love to, when the movie, like, so the rapture happens, right, and people on the plane disappear. The first thing everybody does is try to storm the cockpit. Like, that's everyone's, their first
reaction.
Their
first reaction is to try to destroy the pilot.
Yeah.
Who is flying them.
They're like, we need answers. He's going to know. Yeah. And they, like, try to break the door. Like, how would he know? That doesn't make any sense. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's nuts. And I mean, so, I mean, let's move on past some of that. I want to talk about the way this movie treats the Muslim guy, because the movie the movie really tries to make you think he's a terrorist, right? Like,
for, very hard.
There's the scene where the bald guy's kind of digging through his bag searching for like a bomb. The scene right after that, he like pulls out something real quick, and then you hear an explosion, and it cuts to the daughter walking down the street, and it's like some guy has a shotgun. And so it makes you think, like, oh, wow, that guy shot the bald guy. And then it cuts back, and it's an electric toothbrush that he has holding that guy up to. And then it turns out he's not a terrorist, and the movie acts like – the movie kind of does this thing where it's like, oh, weren't you the racist one for assuming that he was a terrorist?
Yeah. And it's like, tries to do that.
You're the fucking movie that set that up. Like, come on.
Yeah, super weird. I do love the alien conspiracy guy.
Yeah, I like that guy.
What does he do? I mean, I liked him. He was funny. I don't get it though.
He gave some alternative ideas that I enjoyed very much. He said like, "Hey, maybe we went through a wormhole. Maybe it was aliens." And I was like, "Yeah, maybe it was one of those things. Like, let's not just jump straight to Rapture. We don't know."
Yeah, that also seemed like. Like, these guys being like, get a load of science, man. Like, making fun of him because he doesn't believe.
Somebody's read the Langoliers.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, This movie has the same plot as the Langoliers.
Yeah, I mean, it's from the Bible. It's not an original plot. I mean, the plane thing, maybe.
The plane thing I'm talking about. Because have you seen the Langoliers?
That's the Stephen King book, right?
It's a Stephen King book / miniseries, and it's about people on a plane, and like half the passengers disappear.
Yeah.
That's the plot of
here
that
we
movie. And they have to figure out what happened. And in that miniseries / book, it's like these weird giant meatball monsters.
Yes, yeah, Stephen King, we get it.
Yeah, yeah. Which, honestly, like I would have preferred to see in this movie. I wish there were some meatball monsters thrown around in this movie. Thing could have been amazing.
What about that, like, Texas guy? What is he doing?
I have no idea. He has, like, two or three scenes in the movie, and he's just like, oh, money was all that was important to me. He's the rich Texan from The Simpsons. That's all he is.
Reminded me of Unicorn Kitty, Unikitty. Like, business. Like,
numbers. Yeah. I want to talk about Jordan Sparks in the movie, by the way, who also supplies the movie's end credits song, which is a terrible, like, pop song. Not a fan.
Normally you're a big fan of that. Or is it specifically a rap?
It usually has to be a rap. Unless the song is really funny. If it's... Or, you know, but it helps if it's a rap. You know, like, if the movie started off with... Like, if this movie ended and it went, knock, knock, let the devil in... I would have been amazing. By the way, snubbed for Best Original Song at the Oscars this year.
You're not wrong.
Venom. But anyway, Jordan Sparks in this movie, and she's the mother of this daughter who disappears. The daughter kind of mentions that her dad plays for the Jets at some point, which never comes up again. Later it's that the dad is trying to take back the daughter or something, whatever. But I want to bring up the scene where Jordan Sparks holds everyone up at gunpoint. Because whoever thought of that deserves a raise. That was amazing. A, she can't sell it. Like, she's not, like, she's a fine singer, not a good actress in this movie. This is the only thing I've seen her act in, but, like, she's not good in this movie. Also, this is 2014. We're way past 9/11. Like, how did she get that gun on the plane?
It was the Air Marshal's gun.
Was it the Air Marshal's gun?
I think so.
Okay.
Are we supposed to believe? What?
Who was the Air Marshal? I'm not even, like, sure. Like,
he's the guy that goes, huh, you're a gambling man.
Oh, okay.
You know, because we're supposed to remember that.
Gotcha. Okay. So I rescind that one.
It's still weird and comes out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Like, I think that's why I didn't realize it was the Air Marshal's gun, because it was like there was no... Was there ever a scene where they showed her taking the gun or anything?
I don't think so. I mean, who knows? There's a lot where I'm not paying attention in this movie.
But yeah, but like by this movie's logic, which I thought was funny, there's like you see a Jesus fish in a car at one point, and then you see that the people with the Jesus fish got raptured, and then later on the daughter kind of puts on the Jesus fish like dramatically as a necklace.
And that's she got that? Yeah.
I think it was for the Jesus fish from the car. Otherwise, she just randomly had a Jesus fish on her that whole time, which would go against that entire character, right?
You never know with this movie.
But yeah, so if you have the Jesus fish, like, you're probably fine. Like, it doesn't seem like you have to, like, do that much other than just believe really, really hard in God. Although, there is the preacher character, right? Who shows up for, like, a scene, and she, like, the daughter finds the preacher, and she's like, why weren't you raptured? You just talk about this stuff every day. It's like, yeah, but I didn't believe it. And it's like...
Womp womp.
And it's like, what? Like, it just seemed like such an odd, like that character added nothing to the movie. Like, there's no reason for him to be there. But it was just a weird, it was just a weird thing. Like, he just didn't believe the words he was saying for his entire life. And it's like, well, then why were you a preacher? Like, you're not, like, a preacher is not, like, a super well-paying job, you know?
In fact, it's explicitly not.
Exactly. So, like, why be that, you know, if you're not going to believe the things you're saying? Like, there's very little reason.
Ugh, well, there's one very dark reason. Okay. We're not going to talk about it. He didn't get raptured, you know? I'm just saying.
Okay. But, yeah, anyway, so we kind of, let's move on to the end of the movie.
Okay.
Where, you know, Cage has to land the plane. And the plane's running out of fuel. There's no chance they're going to land this thing. But he finally gets through to his daughter. And she kind of clears this runway for him on this highway that's under construction. Because JFK's packed and LaGuardia's packed. And there's no way he can make it to any of the airports.
Right.
So it kind of becomes a thing where she's trying to clear all the stuff off the runway. And Cage, meanwhile, is telling everybody on the plane to start praying really hard. And that had a very, like, had a very Peter Pan vibe to me. Do you have the scene in Peter Pan where it's like, I do believe in fairies, I do, and that's how they bring Tinkerbell back to life?
Just
believe hard enough and we can land this plane. And that's basically what happens. And I will give it a little credit, even though the situation is ridiculous, I think it does a decent job of, like, ratcheting up tension during that scene. Like, when the daughter is, like, you know, pushing stuff off and, like, the bulldozer is going really slow and she's like, oh, man!
And I do love that she clears just enough room on the highway, and there just, like, happens to be a fuel truck at the end.
That was the best thing.
That's so funny. Yeah.
The plane lands, and it just barely stops in front of a gas tanker. It's amazing. Like, what? That was an airplane-level sight gag.
It really was.
And it was truly spectacular. And then the movie ends, by the way, just a weird small thing. When the movie ends and they, like, get the raft down, and the people start jumping, and the short bald guy is standing there for a second, and then the bushel guy just pushes him down.
Like, yeah.
And it was very weird.
He was a dick all along.
Turns out he was a dick. Now I get why he wasn't raptured.
Yeah, super weird. I do love to, like, so that in that before that, you know, Nicolas Cage tells his daughter, like, I need some kind of signal, like a flare or whatever, to be able to see you where the highway is. And
yes.
She blows up something. I don't know what she blows up. The other gas tanker, maybe? I don't know.
I think she just pours a lot of, like, gasoline on the ground or something, and that, like, is what she...
I don't know.
Like, it's good that there was a bunch of gasoline there, I guess.
Yeah, that worked out. But I just love that, like, by this movie's logic, at this point, it's been many hours since... the rapture, and we see, you know, the absolute chaos that moment was as soon as it happened. 12 hours later, it should just be like a fiery hellscape everywhere. Like, the way this movie was escalating, that shouldn't be the only explosion. And it, like, just is, and, like, off in the distance, and it's like, look, over there, yonder explosion. Like, it's hilarious.
We must follow the light like the wise men of old or something. That's not a line in the movie, but it might as well be. Like,
I'm surprised they didn't go for that, actually.
Yeah, the movie ends. There's the terrible pop song by Jordan Sparks that plays over the credits that drive us home, and then that's it. That's Left Behind, man.
Wait, but the last line, though, is, like, I'm going to get it wrong, but Chad Michael Murray is like, this is, like, the end of the world. And the daughter is like, no, it's the beginning. And then we fade out to credits.
Right.
Like, that doesn't make any sense, I don't think.
Well, the beginning of the end of the world, I think, is what she's saying or something. Something along those lines. I think the idea, like, was, like, oh, there's going to be a Left Behind, too. So we got to say something like that that's ominous to bring people in for the next one.
We got 16 movies to make, baby.
Exactly. What do you think, by the way, of Chad Michael Murray's relationship with the daughter? Because I thought that was, like, hilariously fast, the way that progressed from, like, hey, we just met for the first time, to you are the most important thing in my life.
Yeah. It's kind of like, hey, this is crazy, so call me maybe or whatever. Like, it doesn't make any sense. He watches her shut down like a fundamentalist woman. And he's like, I need you in my life forever. Like, what? This is creepy. You're an old human with, like, a job and stuff, and she's supposed to be a college girl.
Right. And who, like, just, like, randomly accosts, like, you know, like, there are people at airports who, like, preach at you, right? And that's, like, you know, an annoying part of airport life. But people don't, like, shout at the, like, nobody, like, actually, like, stops what they're doing and, like, kind of just to tear them down. You know, they kind of just ignore them for the most part.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't really know. Also, what world... are investigative journalists famous enough that people are, like, swarming him for autographs? Because I thought he was just an author, Like, it seems like, oh, he's a writer or something, like, sign this book. And then it's like, no, he's like a newspaper guy. Like, what? Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, well, I think it's because people keep mistaking him for Frank Sinatra, Mike. I think that's
that must be it.
That must be it. All right. Is there any other scene that you wanted to bring up in Left Behind, Mike, or should we move on?
No, I think that's really it.
It's, I mean, there's so much more we could, like, talk about and riff, and honestly, like, I really hope this is in, like, the next season of Mystery Science Theater or something. I'm going to write into Jonah Ray or something just to, like...
Yeah.
Like, you have to do this movie. It's amazing. It's
Everybody tweet at Bill Corbett on Twitter. And the other... Mike... No, what are their names? Do you remember?
Mike Nelson?
Mike Nelson, there we go.
And Trace Kevin. Ballou, right?
Oh, yeah, that Kit. Guy. Yeah.
But, yeah. The important thing... Oh, Kevin Murphy, you were talking about.
Kevin Murphy, there we go. Exactly. I was thinking Kevin Nelson, but I was like, I don't think
that's... Yeah, there are so many Mystery Science Theater people. It gets mixed up in the shuffle. But anyway, yeah. Left Behind, like, an amazingly bad movie. Like, I'm so glad we do this podcast, so I have now seen Left Behind, Mike.
Yeah, you know? As bad as this movie is, it's still a lot of fun, and I think if you were to watch this with a group of people, like, drinking, it would be amazing.
Yes, it's incredible. The insanity of this movie is just unreal. All right, let's get into some Netflix and Letterboxd reviews for Left Behind. All right, Mike?
Let's do it.
Okay, here's one from Netflix that has no rating that goes, "What was that?" Definitely in my top 10 all-time worst films. Did Nick Cage actually read the script before saying yes to this? I like the way only real Bible bashers get to go to heaven, but the Muslims and ordinary people don't. Oh, but wait. They tried to get around it by showing a woman as a druggie, a gambling dwarf, and a money-obsessed Texan. You have vices, so heaven is closed to you, apparently. So what was wrong with the nice dementia lady then? Why doesn't she get to go? Maybe she was a secret adulterer or stole some sweets once. The biggest pile of turd ever. Now everyone go say hallelujah before it's too late.
My like headcanon backstory for Sweet Dementia Lady is that she was like a Nazi hunter post World War II. Just like went crazy, like has scalps or some crazy shit.
Like a hunter for the Nazis or a hunter against the Nazis?
Against the Nazis, which you think would be good, but it's still killing, and that's bad.
Fair enough. Here's a one-star review from Netflix. If you want to save yourself 2 hours, here's a summary. Oh, you're a Christian? How stupid. Oh, no, I regret everything.
Oh, my God. It's amazing.
Here's another one-star review. This one's from Letterboxd. This is actually from Nathan Raven, a critic I follow. I don't want to break the critical embargo or nothing, but I know of a certain film that won't be left behind when Oscars are being given out.
That's amazing.
That's the whole review, yeah. Here's a half-star review from Letterboxd. First start. Why would you set the majority of the story on an airplane? The Rapture isn't suddenly going to reverse. Cage can't challenge God to a fist fight and get all those who inexplicably vanish back, although this film wouldn't have surprised me if it had. So what's the point? All we get is Cage looking harried as he tries to fly the plane, try not to keep copping off with Stewardess Trollope and Mistress Nikki Whelan, and trying to prevent the ridiculously dim passengers from going mad, such as Jordan Sparks, who somehow got a gun on the plane. This, by the way, is after at least half an hour of torturously slow, painful establishment, whereby we meet other ostensible leads, Cassie Thompson and Chad Michael Murray, and struggle through seemingly endless conversations that go nowhere. Thompson is the one on the ground, witness to the low-budget attempts by Armstrong to convey the effect of the rapture from crushing planes to faithless church ministers, but without any style or finesse. You will literally be screaming, "What?" At exactly how Thompson and Cage ultimately resolve the airborne predicament, it would be funny if this all wasn't so desperately awful in its execution. So awful, Cage doesn't even really get the chance to ham it up and provide us with some laughs. No, this is a serious drama about serious Christian issues and the end of the world. Frankly, Sesame Street could have handled this subject with greater maturity and believability.
Wow.
That's it. I would love to see the Sesame Street take on this. That would be amazing.
Yes. Just like the hard... version of this.
Yes, the hardcore version of Left Behind.
The Avenue Q version. I just want Muppets is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, really, we want Muppets for most things. Anyway, here's a 4-star review from Letterboxd. This movie is a freaking amazing journey into freaking awesomeness. Nicolas Cage is freaking awesome, and Chad Michael Murray, if I'm left behind with him, maybe it's worth a life of sin, am I right?
I mean, same though.
This film answers whether dogs go to heaven.
Wait, what? I might have missed that scene.
I guess there must have been a dog. I think there was a dog somewhere on Earth during after the rapture went down. So, like, so I guess dogs don't go to heaven is basically the
Okay, movie. Got it.
It also says, you knew a Muslim guy would be in this, and he was. And surprisingly, he was the least stereotypical character in the movie. And Jordan Sparks, a delight, but not a good actress. Here's a half-star Letterboxd review that reads, earlier this year, Nicolas Cage starred in David Gordon Green's Joe, a film that showcased the man's real talent, and Cage delivered a performance of the ages, a performance of a career resurgence that stands tall amongst others like Mickey Rourke in The Wrestler and Matthew McFuckin-Conaughey in Mud. Cage had finally made a film worth watching, and it was outstanding. I thought to myself, Nick Cage is fucking back. He's going to come back with a vengeance. He's going to show that he's better than Ghost Rider and go on to do great roles like McFuckin-Conaughey. I was wrong.
Oh, no.
Dead fucking wrong. To Cage, Joe was just another film, nothing too spectacular, but to me, it was more than that. So what does Cage do? He goes and does possibly the worst film of the year, the over-the-top, melodramatic, apocalyptic Christian film Left Behind. How could he betray us like this? I thought to myself, is Nick just massively trolling us, or does he want to ruin his once brilliant filmography? To him, it doesn't matter anymore. A role is a role. A job is a job. It all comes down to one thing. Money. Goodbye, Nicholas Kim Coppola, or Nicholas Cage. thanks for giving us joy up until 2005 when The Wicker Man began your downward spiral into madness and terrible films.
Wow.
Yeah.
I hope that person is stuck around and got a chance to see Mandy.
Yeah, got to see Mandy and Spider-Verse and Teen Titans Go to the Movies and, you know, the great Cage roles of 2018. The Cage of Silence is upon us, man. You just had to wait a couple of years. Finally, yeah. I got one last one. It's a half-star review from Letterboxd. Which quotes the movie. It says, either I'm going crazy or the entire world's insane. Nope. Pretty sure it's just you, Nick Cage.
I mean, they got raptured. That's pretty insane.
That is pretty insane. But anyway, those are the Letterboxd and Netflix reviews for Left Behind. So final thoughts, Mike. We are sort of fans of this movie, but in a ironic way, I think is the
yes. Yeah, and this movie is bonkers and fun, but like it's bad.
It's terrible. It's like legitimately like one of the worst movies I've seen in a very long time. But I loved watching every second of it. This movie's insane. Yeah. So I would recommend watching Left Behind because it's wild. Now, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at MDFilmBlog on Twitter.
And you can find me at MSmithFilmBlog on Twitter and all of our podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Now, thanks so much for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DeCrease Show. If you're listening on iTunes or even if you're not, make sure to rate and review us. 5 stars would be great. And tell people you know about the show if you can. And if you want to contact us, you can do so by emailing nicholascagecompleteworks@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. Now, join us for the next Complete Works, where Nick Cage joins up with his Bringing Out the Dead screenwriter, Paul Schrader, for a thriller called Dying of the Light, which is a movie which was famously heavily re-edited by the studio that most of the cast and crew publicly disowned before it even came out. Can't wait for that one.
I've never heard of this.
It completely bombed. I think it went straight to VOD. But Paul Schrader, I mean, just recently, you know, had First Reformed, came out last year, and he got nominated for the screenplay for that movie at the Oscars. So I am curious about it, definitely. Also, Anthony Yelchin's in it, by the way, too, so that's kind of cool.
Whoa.
But anyway, so we'll be talking about that in 2 weeks. Plus, keep an eye out for Film Bookcast, where we'll be talking The Lego Movie 2, the second part. And I am pretty excited about that one. I gotta say.
Absolutely. It's gonna be the best.
You might even say that everything will be awesome.
Maybe. We'll find out.
All right. Thanks so much for listening, guys, and thanks for getting in the cage.